We're all just a gut with accessories. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining. It is I, Rocket Fox, your host, as always, for Fantastically Strange. It is so wonderful to have all of you here. And I am so beside myself with joy to welcome Master Illusionist, Sleight of Handist, Mentalist. There are so many things that I want to say. You know, in going in, I realize right now that of all wizard, perhaps, a true worker of the magical way, it's Z, one of the most amazing magical persons that I know. But Z, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I think wizard is a fairly good description. hi, I'm Z, Z the Mentalist. I do close-up magic, sleight of hand, parties, weddings, festivals, street festivals. And on the side, I'm also a scientist and a genetic engineer at Washington University.
But important things first, the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
High-level science. Yeah. That's cool and all. But the cards.
Now, etymologically, wizard is the suffix ard is an ancient one that isn't really in use anymore. We see it in other words like bastard and so on. And ard is a suffix that means too much of or a plethora of. So a wizard, etymologically, is someone with too much wisdom. And that's where that word comes from.
I have learned a new thing. Too much whiz. I love it.
Too much whiz.
And that actually begs a question for me. Card? Too much C? Too
yeah, maybe.
Is that a reach?
Possibly.
I want those things so desperately to be related. I just really do. but yeah, so I remember, because I've known you for a long time. And
yeah, like a decade now at this point.
I feel
there.
Like it has been long enough that as I'm right now trying to think back, did I meet you over magic? Was it magic that we met? How did I meet you?
Well, I think the first that we met, you were doing some kind of cosplay or some kind of costume.
That tracks. And, yeah.
Yes. And I went, oh my God, here's an awesome looking person in an amazing costume. I want to know who she is. So I said hello and I had a deck of cards in my hand because that was how I met people back then. And I think we became friends from there. We kind of kept running into each other in the same circles and done quite a few events together too.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I do have to say as well, I being a Korean American person, I feel, and I don't know if this is the same for you, but I feel like I instantaneously connect much more quickly to fellow Asian American people.
Oh yeah.
Instantaneously, I'll be like, yo, yeah, I see you there. I see you there. We're buddies now. We're in this together. And especially when you're suddenly wowing me with the magic. So, but yeah, so going into that, the first thing I desperately need to know, how, aside from just one day flying out of the womb with a deck of cards and just blowing the doctor's mind, like how did this first start?
Well, it started actually in college, like freshman year. I've always been a huge nerd. And I've always wanted to know how things work. You know, my parents wanted me to be a medical doctor, as every Asian parent does. Yeah, you know,
I hear it.
That's the Asian connection right there.
That's where it comes from. We can instantaneously be like, yeah, you had to learn an instrument and study hard, and or else you get smacked. Yeah,
yeah, all that. so you know, I was kind of fidgeting with cards and Rubik's cubes and stuff and pursuing all kinds of stuff, and I saw this YouTube video and it was a 4-card magic trick and it blew my mind to pieces, and I became obsessed for like 2 weeks with this like stupid minute long video. I reverse engineered how it must have been done, and I showed a friend of mine and she was like, oh my God, And like, there I was, 18 years old, you know, video games and computer stuff and exams my entire life. That was the first time a girl reacted like that to anything I'd ever done before.
And for anyone who is just listening to the podcast and has not yet signed up for the Patreon where you two can watch the video, I have to explain that I just got some Muppet arms when we got the reenactment of the lady person, and it was amazing. And I do agree that any chance to make someone, anyone do Muppet arms, I think is absolutely worth it. But I have to kind of press into that a little bit. So let me get this straight. You watch this video of this card trick and you, without watching a DIY, a how-to, you reverse engineered this just—
I did it the hard way, and I wound up having to reinvent the wheel in a lot of ways and came up with a lot of really dumb and inefficient ways of doing stuff that it turned out that people had long known easy ways to do. So by the time I started actually learning how you're supposed to do things, it was very easy because I had already stupidly stumbled my way into like the hard way. You want to see the trick?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And for everyone listening, I will describe what I'm seeing as it's happening.
All right.
Oh, I'm so ready for this. Okay, the camera has moved down. The camera is— I'm now seeing an amazing playmat, by the way.
Thank you. We can—
the world exploding.
You're recording my perspective too, right? Or you should be able to get this video.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The video will show all.
Only for podcast listeners will they not get it.
That's right. That's right. That's why you want to get on only $1 a month Patreon.
So here was the trick. This guy dealt out 1, 2, 3, 4 cards.
Okay, so we have 4 cards that have been dealt out.
And they told me the bottom card, and it told me to follow the bottom card, the 4 of hearts. It was on the bottom.
4 of hearts.
They reversed it. And that moves it from the bottom to the top.
4 of hearts is now on the top. We got a little shuffle.
Put it on the bottom, snap their fingers, and it jumped to the top.
Oh my goodness. The 4 went to the bottom, but now it is on the top. It's gone to the bottom.
Jumps to the top.
It is now on the top. My mind goes into the middle, exiting my facial space.
And on top.
The 4 has remained on the top.
Down on the table, still on top. They put it on the bottom, still on top. They put it in the middle, still on top. They put it on the table, still on top. So what are you thinking at this point?
If I were real suspicious of a human being, I would say all these cards are 4 of hearts.
That's what I thought too.
Yeah.
That all 4 cards are the same. And he showed me that, well, actually it is a really lame trick because they are the same. You see the top card is the 4 of spades.
Okay, we've got a 4 of spades.
The second card is the 4 of spades. The third card is the 4 of spades. And the fourth card is the 4 of spades. See?
You're killing me.
1, 2, 3, 4 cards, all the same, all the 4 of spades, except for 1 king, 2 kings, 3 kings, 4 kings.
What?
In 4 cards.
I am about to die. So I just saw one by one, all of the cards get flipped one at a time, and they were all 4 different kings. And now I have no brain left. And the thing about that too, is being able to reverse engineer that makes sense to me that you work high sciences at WashU, which is a university here in the Midwest, because I see that and my hang on, what's that coming out of my— it's my brain. My brain has literally exited my body. But even the first step on being able to reverse engineer that just baffles me. And I do, so there a little bit of truth telling here. Mm-hmm. When I was young, but a child, I actually used to perform magic with my dad.
Really?
Yes. I used to do, I was the magician. He was my assistant. And what that really means, because I was probably like 7 or 8. So what that really means is that he was actually doing a lot of the tricks, and I knew how they worked because I was involved. But the really complicated ones, like there was one he did involving an orange where like a card went inside of an orange sliced it and things happened. I, to this day, I still do not understand what all that entailed. So I do know that one does not ask about the process of tricks. So I will not do that. I would not insult.
No, they say the door to magic is closed but not locked.
That's right. And the thing too is that to my understanding now, people can actually, if you know the places to look, and they're not hard to find. The internet is vast, and you can find anything on the internet, whether you want to or not. but you can actually purchase tricks now. It's like certain magicians will come up with new tricks, and certain mentalists and sleight of hand distists will come up with certain tricks and then sell the process and things like that. All of this to say that reverse engineering that, just that process alone, is so mind-blowing to me, because that just for everyone listening, like, that takes a level of understanding of how these things work, and being able to watch the process of the cards and the handling of them and things, that A, takes a lot of understanding, but B, also takes a lot of patience, the kind of patience that I know myself well enough to know that I do not possess.
You know, when I started out, I thought it was impossible. But as I, you know, watched the same thing over and over and over again, I began to kind of notice different mechanical stuff that was happening. And I thought, holy crap, how could anyone ever do these things this precisely and make it look so easy? But I figured, hey, you know, this person's a human, I'm a human, everything that was done by people, and I'm a people. So the only barrier between me and that is how much work you're willing to put in and how deeply you're willing to think about it. So I kind of dug in and figured that out. And then by the time I was learning other tricks, I had already like independently discovered a whole bunch of like really advanced stuff that they tell you shouldn't try to learn right away. And so the rest of learning more magic turned out to be very easy, because I'd already put in so much work just blindly stumbling in the dark to start.
That is awesome. Well, and I love what you've said there too, the idea of when you want to learn something, this was done by people and I am people. So by that idea, I should be able to learn this too. Like, I love that. That is such a straightforward and just really awesome way to look at various different things,
yeah,
especially when you're approaching a new practice or a new skill or anything like that. I'm gonna go ahead and write that down for myself and post a sticky post-it right here on my computer. That's so cool. So once you started picking a various different, I don't even want to call them tricks, like, because they're so stunning and they're so.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah,
nah, they're tricks is totally appropriate. They're tricks. They're cute little stories that you tell with a lie in the middle to make people think that something impossible happened.
Yeah, and I get that, but at the same time, so much that goes into it. And I've watched a fair number of, and I even hesitate to call these reality TVs, because mm-hmm. in my own mind I categorize that in a certain type of way. But it's not scripted TV, so I guess it's reality, but shows that interview various different people and talk about, you know, oh, these are various different ways that these things are done. And mm-hmm. there's so much that goes into the idea of, as you said, the storytelling of it. It's not just the hand mechanics and things like that. It's
right.
The storytelling, but it's also the purposeful misdirection. There's so many things that are being juggled at the same time. Calling it a trick feels almost disingenuous.
You know, you're right about the juggling act, but it was a lot easier when I first started out, because I didn't know about any of that yet. All I did for the first few years was like obsessively study mechanics. Mm. And it wasn't until I reached a ceiling of how far being tricky with my fingers could get me that I actually started to realize that being entertaining is a completely different skill set that I also needed to get good at. And so I began to start learning that too. It helped to have the like base of the mechanics so that I could actually perform and actually get in front of someone and like bring the energy up and bring them into it and grab a crowd and have them all around me and keep everyone like focused on what I was doing and like making sure everyone was having a good time. I couldn't start learning that until the mechanics were second nature. But when I was learning mechanics, I had no idea about all of the other things that you have to juggle at the same time. So by the time I started learning to juggle that, it was all right, because yeah, there were five balls in the air, but four I already knew how to handle.
Well, that's a great way of looking at it. But yeah, and suddenly theatrics enters chat.
Yes, I spent many years incredibly upset that the trick people thought was most impressive that I did was also the one that was the absolute easiest and took the least mechanical skill. I spent so long, like, you know, obsessively studying complex mechanics to get to the point where people, like friends of mine, were telling me that their favorite trick was the one that you could buy for $8 at any magic shop, like any anywhere in the country, and like a 10-year-old could take it and perform it with no real practice. Like, that irked me until I realized that there was a lesson there that I should maybe take seriously.
I mean, hey, at that point, you just take the deck and you just fling all the cards in somebody's face and go, you have no understanding. You don't know. No appreciation for my craft.
You don't know how hard I worked on this. But I suppose that's a life lesson, you know? It doesn't matter how hard you work on something. You could work, you could do the best that you can. You could, like, pour your life into something, and people don't like it, they don't like it, you know? You could spend $2 million of advertising budget creating this video, and you put it on YouTube, and then somebody who uploads a video of their cat falling off a railing gets 500 times as many views as you do. That's life.
I mean, I think we learned that about the Cats movie. I don't know how high of a budget that had, but I didn't watch it. I didn't watch the movie. I'm going to be totally honest about that. But the trailer I found very troubling.
It was a horrible disaster, but so was the musical.
But there was something. So the musical had the video that was like a movie, but a movie of the musical. And I had a soft spot for that because it was a movie of the musical, and those cats had noses that were cat mm-hmm. noses. And I understood that. I was like, yo, I know what a cat nose looks like. These are cat noses. That's all I ask. That's all I ask of my cats is for them to have cat noses and not human noses. You know, I've got a low bar for things like that.
I saw the movie in theaters twice.
Go on, tell me more.
Well, it was like an acid fever dream. It was so cringingly bad and weird that you're just aghast and agape at it throughout the whole movie because your mind is begging for it to start making sense. Do you know the plot of Cats?
Okay. So I have owned the discs. In so much as there's a plot to be known.
Yes, it's a bunch of cats having an annual dance contest for the right to take the UFO to cat heaven.
Right, so that they can come back and reincarnate.
Oh, no, they don't come back.
Eventually, like, I think the idea is, you know, the, no spoilers here, but whoever makes it to cat planet, I think eventually can reincarnate if that cat so chooses.
I never saw the musical, so I don't know.
Maybe I don't know. Maybe I just imbued that myself.
Yeah, there's all, you know, there's Rebel Wilson eating a bunch of tap dancing cricket, like cockroach children.
No, that's not a musical.
No.
that's something that was movie specific.
Yes. No, it's very, like, okay, the dance is absolutely incredible. Like, every single, the choreography is amazing. The dancers are obviously, like, top of their class, like classically trained ballet dancers and dancers. And so that part of it was quite beautiful to watch. It's just the story that they were telling was not a story in any sense of the word.
Now, the fact that you saw it in theaters twice, though, this makes me wonder, did I miss out on something by not seeing it in theaters?
I saw it once with one group of friends when it first came out, and everyone on the internet was finding the most creative ways to describe how much of a disaster it was. And then a different group of friends were going to see the movie, so I wanted to experience it again through their eyes because they had never seen it before.
That's fair.
Yeah.
You know, though, I feel like if I were to ever experience this, I feel like you can only experience it at that size, right? Like you can't experience it on a regular TV. What even is that? Why go that small? If you're going to see something like that, you got to see it big, right?
It needs to be in your face and inescapable, you know?
It has to be like staring into the face of the sun.
Yeah.
Especially if they were to do a cat butthole edit, because then it would literally be staring into the face of the sun, the many suns.
I hope not.
Oh no. So yeah, that being said, so sleight of hand takes a lot of finger dexterity. The kind of finger dexterity that I am very jealous of, and I have every intention on learning, and I ended up getting this large coin that I have every intention on starting to do the you know, where you flip the
coin. Oh yeah, the finger rolling, yeah.
Is there any sort of practice that you initially started with on how to manipulate your fingers?
Oh, I wish I could tell you, but I never got into coins because I suck at finger dexterity, actually.
Well, no, I mean, even for cards, though. Like, was there anything that you did that... Because even with cards...
Yeah, yeah. What I did was I sucked for many, many, many
years. Touché. Yes, okay.
Hate to say, but it's true. Like, you know, I spent I don't know how many years being really just awful at it. But over time, as you kind of think about what needs to happen and what you need to do, you find ways of doing it that are easier. And, you know, you get better at something the more you do it. And I spent, I can't count how much time just like sitting with a deck of cards in my hand, just practicing the same move over and over and over again. And I would get better at it. I'd get worse at it. I'd be like watching podcasts while playing EVE Online while like listening to like a lecture from class on the other screen and fidgeting with my hands at the same time because ADHD 10-track brain. If I don't have all 10 tracks running something at the same time, it doesn't really work. So that was kind of how I got there. There's a trick that I invented maybe like 6-7 years ago, and invent isn't quite the right word. It's a combination of a bunch of different routines that had already existed, but I put them together in a way that I thought was very interesting because they flowed very well with each other and kind of became a whole sequence.
So how long have you been doing this?
12 years now at this point.
12 years. And so you said you've done a whole bunch of different types of events with this. And yeah. I know, because we are friends on the social media, I do see you post when you do various different events. What are the top, I won't make you choose one, but the top selection, or if you do have one, favorite? Well,
I think probably the three coolest shows I've ever done.
Yeah.
One was, I think, City Hall in downtown St. Louis for the Mardi Gras Mayor's Ball. That was the fanciest, ritziest event I ever did. And it was a really great time. I just got paid to like spend 3 hours going through the crowd, showing random people magic tricks. Had a crowd going for quite some time and then go somewhere else in the building, grab another crowd, get it going.
That is awesome.
Here and there. And the other one I think would be my first show on stage at the Monocle, which is now closed and out of business, unfortunately, but place dear to my heart. And that was, I think, like 5 years ago was my first time. It was stepping onto stage alone with a bunch of fancy words and a bunch of schemes and plans. And people loved the show. It went better than I could have imagined. And really have spent a lot of time on that stage since then. And I think recently, one of my favorite gigs was probably welcoming back the freshman class of St. Louis University High School. They had a spirit day, like... event. They had like, you know, bouncy castles and giant dartboards on sports fields, and they had like activities, and it was like, you know, everyone back in school after a year of pandemic lockdown. It was like the freshman class starting the school year, and so the school wanted to do something special. So I spent an hour surrounded by like all the SLU boys doing close-up for them. And then I did like a 30-minute set on stage of mentalism and mind reading and predictions. And oh my God, like it was a standing ovation. And then all the students started like roaring together. And the sound of like 200 like freshman boys all roaring at once was pretty amazing.
Oh, that is so cool. Well, and especially, I cannot even imagine first time being back together and being able to experience something so cool. Like, yeah, that's really special.
It was a great way to dip my toe back into performing.
Yeah.
I've got two weddings coming up next month. I've got two weddings in October as well. And I'm also going to be performing for the Park Central Gala, which is the neighborhood development organization for the Grove neighborhood.
Nice.
They have their annual gala. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. For anyone who is unfamiliar, the Grove is a super cool neighborhood. So just to clarify, that's going to be a super cool event for anyone who may not already be aware. No, that's awesome. So yeah. How's it felt being back out performing?
It feels good. You know, magic really is a live art. I know that a bunch of magicians have been offering like Zoom shows and doing stuff with cameras and so on. But honestly, if you're talking camera tricks and video editing and so on, plenty of people already do that on TikTok without the pretense of like being a magician. It really is a live art. And viewing it through a camera is inherently kind of limiting because a lot of it depends on, you know, the body language, and it depends on directing people's attention to and away from things. And it's really hard to misdirect a camera. So like on camera, you're limited to camera tricks and sleight of hand that works when people are burning your hands. You can't, for example, you know, say something interesting and lean in and catch their eye and look them right in the eye, which makes them look you in the eye, because that's what we do naturally to be polite and to be attentive. And while they're looking you in the eye, you swap a card for another in your hand, like right underneath their noses, and they'll never see it because you've signaled with your body to ask them to look you in the eye, and they do. And you're waiting for that so that you can get away with doing that switch. Can't do that in front of a camera.
Yeah. And I think that really speaks to the idea too. When I've emceed for various different events as well, there is something about being able to respond to a crowd energy, you know, an individual energy when you're performing live, which is very fluid. You change up what you're doing based on the energy you're receiving from people, you know?
Absolutely. It reminds me of that story of Ian McKellen as Gandalf. Ian McKellen is Gandalf, right? Yes. He was filming The Hobbit, and you know, in the scene in Hobbiton, poor man is sitting alone in a green screen talking to characters that will be added in later, and he's on like take 40 of sitting alone in a green screen pretending to be surrounded by doors, and the man's just crying. He's like, this isn't what acting is about back in my day. Yeah. So very much, you know, doing magic tricks in front of a camera feels very much like that. It's you're not standing face to face with someone. You're not physically, you know, entering their space and entering their attention and like monitoring where their attention goes. So, you know, you're limited to kind of the tricks that I started out with a long time ago that really focus on the sleight of hand and the scripting more than they do like the interaction and the back and forth.
Absolutely. Which I guess begs the question, I'm curious, have you ever watched any of the shows from other magicians that are street magicians? I won't drop names or anything, but who go around and do their jazz.
Yeah, I've watched a little bit, but you know, it's like as a magician, a lot of that stuff is made for laymen. And so there's stuff about it that it's like, oh, I wouldn't have done it that way. But also, you know, I love magic, but I don't want to watch, you know, 5 seasons of Magicians on Penn and Teller. And, you know, people always bring up, oh, have you seen this movie? Have you seen that movie? And I'm like, well, you're a doctor. Have you watched all of Scrubs? Or like, you're a bus driver. Have you like gone and checked out buses on vacation when you're traveling abroad? Yeah, you're like, I've gone through my phase of like obsessively vacuuming up every single little bit of information about magic that I can. But that was years ago. And at this point, I'm very comfortable with what I do. And when I have ideas about other things I'd like to do, I kind of work on them myself until I come up with something that works, I go out and try it with people and build it myself. And yeah, other people do some cool stuff here and there, but I do enough magic in front of people. I don't really need to like spend my off time doing it too. It's a little bit work. It starts feeling like research.
Well, and also I am someone who, this may come as a shock, but during my downtime, I'm a little bit introverted. Like, I love doing one-on-ones and I'm very showy and I like a lot of attention. So I like doing things like that. But also when I'm rejuvenating, man, I need to like crawl into my hole. I need to burrito in a blanket. I need to, you know, surround myself with my animals and just kind of disappear for a while.
Yeah, I'm an introvert too. I think one of the things I really loved about magic was that it was kind of a crutch to interacting with people, but in a way where I was doing something and showing them and I had a lot of control over what happened and what they saw. And it was something that they liked and wanted to see too. It seemed less scary than open freeform conversation, you know?
Well, in a way, it almost seems like you're able to kind of control the flow of the conversation.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, because I definitely have noticed for myself, there was an event that I went to. I was doing a Mad Moxie cosplay, and I was actually brought in. I think it was a TEDx event.
I remember. I think we did talk together one year.
Yeah, 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 because I remember seeing you there, and I you were performing there as well. But usually when I'm brought in to perform at an event, it is so much easier to interact with people because I am there doing a job.
Yes. So, and you know, you're paid to be there, you're expected to be there, and people know of you, which makes it a very different environment.
Yeah. And you know what your role is too, right? You're there to entertain. And that is a very clear cut role as opposed to just here to eat some food and stare at people vaguely until I'm done with that and then leave. That's just what goes through my mind. I don't know if anybody else experiences that, but.
Oh, no, absolutely. 100% with you on that.
Don't get me wrong. If there's free food, I will be there for that, especially if it's like the mayor's Mardi Gras. I will eat free mayor food all day long.
Oh, it was good too. I had steak and shrimp and like good stuff.
That sounds amazing. Like for people who cannot see, I'm making the kind of disgusted face you make when something seems so good that you have to make like a grossed out face. Like, that sounds amazing. Yeah, that is awesome. So I'm curious, your other work that you do, the high-end work at WashU, remind me of your official title.
I'm a staff scientist.
A staff scientist. Tell me about your science.
Well,
what you can, if it's top secret.
Oh, no, not at all. We make genetically engineered mutant mice that replicate various different kinds of human diseases, or that could potentially replicate various kinds of human diseases, so that we can study more about those diseases and kind of figure out what's going on and why they happen the way they do, and maybe learn something about how to treat them. I do gene editing of like mouse brain cells and human like blood cancers and so on in growing in plastic dishes. And we also make materials that get micro injected into mouse embryos and implanted into mice and hopefully lead to birth of like genetic mutant mice that have specific mutations in parts of their DNA that we designed.
I have so many things I want to say. Where to start? Have you encountered anything truly freaky yet?
Yeah. Mycoplasma. Mycoplasma is a tiny, tiny, tiny cell, like just barely bigger than a bacterium. It's a mammalian cell, and they are like weeds. They grow everywhere. They're very hard to get rid of. They're very hardy. They're very dumb. And if you get mycoplasma cells growing amongst your other cells, you will never get rid of them and they will fuck everything up forever. And because they're so small, you can't see them with a microscope, which makes them really hard to detect. And because they're so small, you can't really separate them out from the giant, you know, mammalian human and mouse cells that you're working with. So yeah, they're a pox and a plague. Everyone hates them. They are awful if you're growing cells and tissues in the lab.
Whoa.
Mycoplasma.
this is my first time hearing of this, and I, for one, am horrified. Is this something I, as a non-staff science adjacent person, should be concerned about?
No. It's a cell that just happens to grow exceptionally well in the specific kind of nutrient broth that we grow cells in.
And this is not the kind of nutrient broth that might accidentally crop up in my pantry or like... No, absolutely not.
It's like 10% baby cow juice.
You have not seen my pantry. It can get real gnarly in there. Wow, you do actually, I don't know why I'm saying this in such a shocked voice.
I just made synthetic viruses containing custom DNA that we use to introduce custom DNA into cells. It's actually the same technology as how the Johnson & Johnson vaccine works. Oh. If you take that and you combine it with CRISPR, you can install permanent edits on its own the way it is in the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It doesn't really do that, but we can make it do that with an additional component. We took human embryonic kidney cells. Well, I took human embryonic kidney cells and I fed it with all the parts for making these virus particles and also the DNA I wanted to load in there. And so virus parts get made and they assemble and they take that DNA I introduced and they package it in. And then instead of a virus, which is a little gene injection machine that injects copies of how to make more of itself, it's a gene injection machine that contains copies of the thing we want to put in there instead. And so we use that to inject DNA into things.
That is so cool. And also when you say that you specifically did, I'm imagining you in your kitchen, just like with all the goods. Just in there making this happen. That is
it's
my brain canon now.
It's, well, the actual work of genetic engineering, it's mostly moving tiny drops of liquid around between tiny plastic tubes.
I mean, that is some delicate work, though. That
it is. Delicate. It's very. It's a perfect job for paranoid, anxious, neurotic perfectionists.
All right. Well, that sounds like me.
Yeah, you know, because we're moving things like 1 microliter at a time, and you have to move precisely 1 microliter, which is like 1/20th of a droplet worth of liquid.
Oh, on second thought, I might be too neurotic for that. Even just hearing that makes me like...
And you might have like... 50 tubes that need stuff, and you have 200 tubes of different ingredients, and each of your 50 tubes needs 1 microliter of each of these things and 2 microliters of each of those things, and you have to do those 250 steps without losing your place or messing up or forgetting where you're at, getting confused or getting distracted.
Oh no, that's not for me. I take it back. I feel my heart beating right now just hearing
this. I've sometimes spent an hour labeling 100 plastic tubes with a tiny Sharpie.
Mm-hmm. I think this seems amazing for someone who is all of the things you mentioned, but also exquisitely calm. You know, I mean, I feel like it takes a calmness to be able to do this as well. Like someone who gets too nervous, I feel like would explode.
We have seen exactly that before. Actually, a friend of mine had an absolutely awful story in grad school. She was measuring the specific amount of neurotransmitters in different parts of the mouse brain. So she was like, you know, killing mice, cutting off their heads, cracking their skulls open, taking out the brain, and then like dissecting out one particular little part of the brain, and then like weighing it, grinding it up, and sticking it into essentially an electronic nose to like measure exactly how much neurotransmitter was in there. And she had to throw out 4 months of results. Because what she had done was that she had failed to account for the weight of Sharpie ink on the tube. And that fucked up her results. And she had to throw everything out and start over. Because the weight of ink left behind on those tubes mattered. And the measurements that she took could not be used because of it.
I think I just died. If you've ever seen an anime where the spirit leaves through the mouth, I think that's what just happened. I would have an episode. I don't know what kind of an episode, but I feel like I would have some kind of tragedy befall my state. Like, I mean, that is precision to the max. Like, holy cow. And even by what you said, that tiny amount of brain matter, I mean, even just that is working with such a small amount of stuff that I guess it makes sense that anything extra would, but holy cow, that is I mean, it's not crazy, but it's also crazy.
The weight of ink on the freaking tubes, man.
Oh my God. So I guess, I mean, circling back, do you feel like there's anything about just this aspect of your job that's kind of tied into your propensity for being able to figure out, going back to the beginning, working backward to this trick? I mean, it seems like it's all kind of a part of who you are, right?
It's all the same universe.
Yeah.
And I've always thought that if you could understand the rules of how the world works, then that gives you, you know, peace of mind and control and stability over the future. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of always believed that, but it turns out that the rules of how the world works are kind of complicated and kind of fuzzy at the edges, and we don't really know everything yet. But it's exciting that if we look at the world in a systematic and rigorous way, and we try to account for and correct for the fact that we are incredibly biased, very, very stupid apes who somehow managed to invent smartphones. If we account for all the ways in which our thinking is flawed, and we try to cut through that, and we try to really be rigorous about what is and isn't provably true, you know, it's really exciting that the world is knowable and that it all operates under the same rules. And I find that's kind of beautiful. And so it makes me excited to figure more of it out. And that's kind of what I'm about, whether it's biology or mechanisms of cancer, or even just the way that we process and interpret what we see and how that can be misled. It's all part of the same world, the one that we're in.
Absolutely. Well, and the thing I see that really kind of ties those strings together too is this demystifying of these things, finding the truth that lies behind the methodologies in these things.
I've given a lecture series called The Psychology and Neuroscience of Magic, and I've given it at Center Stage at the St. Louis Science Center over a dozen times now at this point. And I also went on a lecture tour series throughout the St. Louis library system. And I went to 10 different libraries in the St. Louis area, delivering this talk at 10 different locations over the course of two or three months. That was a really fun summer a few years ago.
That is so cool. Is this talk available online anywhere? Like, is there anywhere anybody can find
it? You know, unfortunately, I never managed to get really good video and audio of it. I was still kind of starting out. I didn't have good equipment. Cell phone video with the phone pointed in the wrong place.
Oh, no. Yeah. Cell phone video, phone video pointed at the person watching. Oh, no. No one needs that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what a cool talk, though. Can you give us a TLDR of it?
TLDR, the fact that we believe that our view of the world is continuous is an illusion inside our head, not something that comes to us through our eyes and our senses. The fact that we think that the world is continuous is really not the way our brain works at all. We fill in gaps, we see what we expect to see, we make assumptions, we autofill so much, and we miss so much. And we're only ignorant to how much we're missing because most of the time, the world around us is not actively trying to trick us. And when they are, when a magician is doing their thing, that's when we start to see the cracks in how flawed our ability to track the world actually is.
That is so cool. Do you potentially see the return of this talk at any time, or?
Oh, I would hope so. I think that would be really fun. Actually, the Ethical Society of St. Louis reached out to me a while ago asking me if I would like to be a guest speaker. And so I'm still waiting to hear back from them. I said, heck yes, of course I would. They're a great secular nonprofit organization, like a church, except without the religion. But they do charity work. They do, you know, weekly meetings and lectures on leading an ethical life and talks on humanism and so on. I think they meet every Saturday morning. I have a beautiful building down in Clayton.
Yeah, well, no, please keep me updated on that. That is awesome. And I am wondering, just especially in the space that we're in now, if maybe they would have some sort of little pin into the virtual world with it, or if
that'd be cool.
You know, if they do end up doing it, beautiful listeners, I will post a link to that if that ends up happening, which I really hope they do, though, because that would be super cool. I know that I am fortunate enough to live in the area, so I could see it firsthand, but I would love for more people to be able to tune in and be able to take a listen to that. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I would love to see you there.
Yeah. Well, no, thank you so much for taking the time and having us sit down and talking about your craft and the surprise science that I apparently just didn't even know was also fantastic and strange that you're totally all neck elbows deep into. That is really awesome.
Do you want to hear about something that in reality is actually 10 times less cool than the incredibly cool that it sounds, but absolutely, it's still pretty damn cool? My boss asked me to look into buying a immortalization kit for the lab earlier this week. So I'm looking into that right now.
I need to know at least what it is.
Okay. So immortality is kind of a tough sell for multicellular organisms like us. But an immortalization kit is basically, it is all of the genes that you need to turn normal cells into infinitely growing cancers, which is kind of useful because if you have an animal with genetics that are really interesting and you cut cells and harvest cells out of the animal, those cells behave like normal body cells. They don't divide infinitely. They don't divide indefinitely. They behave and they eventually grow old and die. And what we want, because we want to make more of them and have them replicate forever, we want them to grow forever. So we take all the genes that make cancers grow forever, and they're all packaged together in a kit, and we stick them in, and we can turn these normal body cells into immortalized cells, which just divide and divide and divide and divide and divide.
I am both intrigued and horrified. And I have just thought of like at least three different horror movie plots that I'm equally in love with. That makes absolute sense in a very scientific and grounded way, but in my mind it has gone off the rails.
It's not what people think of when they think of immortalization.
Sure.
But what it actually is legitimately pretty cool.
Yeah, no, well, it makes complete sense for why it would be useful.
Yeah.
And what you're doing with it, but on a larger scale that would not actually be feasible nor work. But in my brain space, the horror movie is writing itself. And I will thank you in the credits right up there. Yes, yes.
Yeah, if we ever get a zombie plague, I did do my PhD on brain-eating behavior manipulating parasites and the genetic engineering of those brain worms.
So
it may be my fault, but I swear I wouldn't have done it on purpose.
So what I'm hearing right now is that you'll be back for a future episode on the topic of brain-eating parasites.
Oh, my research actually turned out a bit more disappointing than I was hoping. I had a beautiful idea, and I was like, okay, this is definitely going to work. But I couldn't replicate any previous people's results. And really? I actually found that the things that everyone thought were involved in manipulating brain dopamine was actually involved in a different part of the life cycle elsewhere.
Really?
Yeah. Turns out that 90% of your serotonin and like more than 50% of your dopamine is in your gut. Yeah. Your gut has its own brain separate from the one up here.
So it's not just hype, because I actually have heard that. I've heard recently, actually, that they were like, oh, studies talk about like the dopamine in your gut. So that's actually true.
Oh, yeah. Major functions in digestion and hunger and like all that. Yeah, your gut is the primitive thing that's been around way longer than your brain has.
Your
gut came first. Worms are still just basically a gut. And every kind of animal are just different kind of accessories around a digestive tube.
we're all just a gut with accessories. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, last night I had some sort of weird stomach thing going on, and I also felt just very off and such like that. Now it's all coming together. I'm sorry down there, buddy. It's all coming together now. Oh, that's the second movie that is writing itself right now that you are going to get a major credit in. I want you to know this. I am a giant worm with legs and
everyone
arms.
You know that meme where like where it talks about like if you think about it, when two people kiss, they make a continuous tube with at both ends. Yeah. It's more true than you think.
Oh no, it absolutely is. Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. And I'm not gonna stop thinking about that for at least like a week.
All the organs that we have and the brain that we have to make decisions with, all of that is accessories to keep that digestive tube alive.
You know,
tube which has its own brain.
And its own decision. That is really like that is what fascinates me the most though. The fact that it has its own complete brain and
it's got its own system.
Yeah, and its own biodiversity and such like why am I blanking? The pre and probiotics?
The probiotic people. Actually, Washington University is one of the like major centers for that kind of research. What was his name? This guy has won, I don't know if he's won a Nobel, but like he's won like all of the awards about this, and he's one of the major people in the field. One of the biggest sources of gut microbiota research comes from WashU. I've listened to talks with WashU grad students where they experimentally manipulate the bacterial flora inside of mouse intestines, and they show, you know, major changes in behavior and diet and so on just from that. Yeah.
I propose this. Mm-hmm. Zombies, but by manipulating the gut brain. Discuss.
Make people hungry enough, they'll do anything for food.
Well, that's zombie, true. That is fair. That's fair.
Yeah, you starve a whole bunch of people for a week and then put some cakes in front of them and you'll see zombies.
put people cakes in front of them and, you know, I mean, it'll work itself out. You know what? We'll circle back on this. We'll put a pin in this and we'll circle back. I need to do some reading on this, on the worm that is us. but I believe in the feasibility of creating a zombie horde that will be also faithful minions. Big plans.
Queen of the zombies. Okay, so if we get taken over by zombies, obviously it's not going to be my fault. It's going to be
yours. Just said so.
You just said so. You admitted it on camera and everything.
Well, you know, I mean, that's bold.
Don't worry. They won't mind after their brains are eaten anyway.
You know, I will neither confirm nor deny the presence of giant worm zombies. The point is that is something to figure out at a later time. Thank you so much. This has been an absolute pleasure and a delight.
Thank you for having me.
You are awesome, and oh my god, we have covered such amazing stuff that I'm so just absolutely delighted about. And for all of the people, please, my last question for you is, where can people find you? Where can people creep on you in a consensual, creeptastic way?
Well, I'm most active on Facebook. If you look me up, Z Tang Wang. I probably spend like 80% of my social media life there. And you can find links to my website for my magic at www.zthementalist.com. And on YouTube, I have one channel, Science Time, where I post, you know, educational science videos. And another channel, Metastasis 404, which is my gaming. I do a lot of gaming in VR.
That is so awesome. And I do have to ask, what socials are you playing these days?
These days, well, I'm playing Pavlov VR, which is basically Counter-Strike in virtual reality. I have about 1,700 hours in it, and we are in season 8 of our competitive pro scene. And I also recently got into Microsoft Flight Simulator, so I've been flying virtual flights around the world and trying to learn how to control a plane and keep it steady in the air without ripping it apart.
Good goals. I like it. So awesome. Well, and also for everybody listening, I will put all of those links in the show notes. So make sure to give Z a follow. Go check out all the channels. Go watch a plane virtually fly and not break apart. And yeah, thank you so much again. It has been absolute pleasure.
Yeah. Before we go, do you want to see one more card trick?
Yes, absolutely. Always.
All right. I'd like you to pick a card. This is a slightly more interactive trick. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to riffle through the deck. Say stop anywhere you like, okay?
Okay. Stop.
Right here. Okay. Not this one, but the card you stopped at.
Okay. Should I tell you what it is?
Oh, it's all right. Yeah, go ahead. Queen of Spades.
Yes. So we have here, everyone, the Queen of Spades. And
we're going to lose it in the deck.
It's gone into the deck. I now see the deck being held. I'm looking at the back. It's being shuffled.
And now, quiz time. I'm going to riffle through the deck again. Say stop anywhere you like.
Okay. Stop.
Right here? Do you want to add a few? Do you want to stop right there?
We'll stop right there.
If we stop right here, you see we stop at one card. Right here in the middle of the deck, the Queen of Spades.
Wow.
Well, you found this one. I found all four.
What? So basically what just happened is we got another flipping through the deck. And when I said stop, there was indeed a stop. And then got the Queen of Spades. And then four cards were flipped. They were all four queens. It was amazing. Any semblance of mine I had left in my brain space has now gone away. It is completely gone. But that is awesome. That is so cool. And once again, everybody, go check out Z. You're going to want to see all of this. And if anybody wants to actually see the video from this interview, go check out the Patreon at patreon.com/rocketfox. All the fantastically strange bonus content is only $1 a month. But with that shameless plug, thank you one more time. I'm just going to say, I think that's a total of like five times, but I cannot thank you enough. That is why.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. And in the meantime, I'm gonna take my worm body and we're gonna grab some grub. So I hope you have an excellent rest of your night. And
you too.
Yeah, and as for you wonderful listeners and viewers, have an amazing rest of your evening as well. And I hope to see you next time. Rainbow.